a little bit of a different show here at Bad Voltage. As regular listeners will know, and now everyone will know because I'm saying it, we weren't able to all get together last week and record at our normal time, and we thought we'd do a little bit of a bumper show this week, and it turned out we couldn't all get together for that one either. So what you have here is one half of Bad Voltage, which is Stuart and I, recording now. And we're just going to kind of ad hoc talk about a couple things, some updates from past shows and some new things that have happened and things like that. We kind of just ramble for a while. And then we're not even sure. Brian and Jono might individually record separate segments or they might not. So at the time we're recording this, we don't actually know. So you get kind of a little bit of a mystery intro here. And then what follows this, we only know half of. But if they do record something, I'm sure it will be fabulous, I would assume.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely, yes. There was no hesitation there whatsoever. It will be fabulous. I'm totally looking forward to it. So, you know, fingers crossed for that happening, listeners. So we thought we'd just kick around some of the things that have been going on. You know, as you said, revisit some of the things that Bad Voltage have talked about in the past. And one of the things I wanted to come back to was Brave, the web browser. Now, we talked about this some time ago, and things have kind of progressed ever since. But the thing that they're not doing, to recap slightly first, for people who haven't been listening to Bad Voltage since the beginning.
These people exist.
Right. I know. It's just, I don't understand these people, but apparently they're around, you know, whatever, so they get a chance.
All right.
Brave, the idea behind this is it's a web browser based on the WebKit Blink engine. But the thing they do is essentially they replace ads on a page. So it's like it's got a built-in ad blocker, but they replace ads on a page with different ads that they promise, you know, they won't violate your privacy, they won't track you around the internet, that kind of thing, and then collect the money. And then they disperse that money to the owners of the websites. Right, so it becomes a more kind of direct monetization thing. And this is all tied in with a whole bunch of stuff around micropayments and bitcoins and all that kind of thing, which you can get into. But the interesting thing is this business model. That's what they're doing differently.
Yes.
We talked about that when we originally talked about Brave. Since then, I've been using it on my phone, although not as much on my desktop. Have you?
So I had not used it at all until about an hour ago. I did download it in anticipation of doing this segment here and have used it a little bit. It seems roughly as fast as Chrome or Chromium for me. Assuming you have an ad blocker installed in Chrome, it seems to render pages as fast, if not maybe a little faster, maybe on par with it. I cannot see the point, and I certainly cannot see how they raised $7 million to do this.
I think the idea behind it is essentially disrupting the whole online advertising business. I think if you said to people in general, okay, how about this? We'll have a world in which there are no ads, no online advertising, no people tracking you, none of that stuff. Instead, you drop $5 a month into a box, and that's all you have to do. And then we just take the sites you go to and we divide up that $5 into tiny bits and then give everyone you visit a bit. Right? At that point, everyone gets paid. Everybody's basically happy. Your life is way less miserable. If you try to bring that in now, people would be like, I don't want to pay $5. But if that had been around from the beginning, you can imagine people being kind of okay with it as an idea. I think that's the world Brave are trying to introduce. To instead of having this rather clumsy way of monetizing everything where people show ads they hope you click on while you hide the ads because you don't want to click on them and people hope they get paid enough to keep doing journalism or whatever.
Right.
Disintermediating, that kind of thing.
I think we'll all agree, and most people would agree, even non-technical people, even if they don't fully understand the details, that the current online advertising marketplace is broken, right? Pretty systemically broken. It doesn't respect privacy in any meaningful way. And on the other side of the coin, somewhat ironically, it doesn't even work as well as it could if it did respect our privacy, right? I think in an effort to track everything, they've actually made it less good on both sides of the equation, which is actually difficult to do. So I wholeheartedly agree that the current online advertising system is broken. I also agree that ads that respect privacy need to be a thing, I think, for the web to continue to have the high quality content that it is. Like a lot of high quality content obviously is made by people who don't care about making money. That content will always be there. That content's great, but I do want journalism to be a thing, to take one example, and for journalism, for people to be flying journalists over the world and uncovering things that need to be uncovered and just doing that. We need some kind of remuneration system that works. And I think it should respect your privacy. So up to here, we're on the same page. How Brave solves that, I'm not sure exactly, because for them to have a meaningful impact, they will have to have a giant share of the market, which I cannot see being a thing. Exactly, but beyond that, if they split the money up in a way that is consummate with the amount of page views that are viewed, what you have is a system that encourages clickbaity bullshit. And I don't want that internet. It doesn't pay you for being good, which is how I think it should work. It just pays you for being there. And in that case, clickbait wins. And I don't want that now, world. And it incensed that world.
I do kind of admit that because it's very difficult to measure whether a thing is good quality, but it is easy to measure how many people visit it. People tend to build stuff which rewards you based on the things we can measure rather than intangibles. But
then you get all a whole bunch of seven things you wouldn't believe. Click here to find out what. And I'm tired of those.
You do get that. And that's kind of pathological output of the system. But the alternative, which is you say, okay, we reward people for doing good things by saying, if you want these good things, you have to pay for them, is currently being tested to destruction by the whole journalism industry, who are finding that it doesn't work.
I won't concede that I don't have the answer here. I just don't think... I think the way incentives work, this is not the answer, because it will not incent what... At least what I want. I mean, maybe I don't want what most people want, which is fair. But I think we need an answer. I don't have the answer. I don't see how a browser that takes ads away but then reinserts its own ads and then uses Bitcoin on the back end to do micropayments on a per-page view. The whole thing, I just cannot see working. I think we need new ideas like this. This is something that I haven't seen anyone else do on this scale, and I like that.
Yes.
I like people trying to innovate on business models, even though I hate that term. I do like what they're doing. I cannot imagine they recoup $7 million worth of VC doing it.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is exactly the thing. That I like the fact that they're innovating on their business models. Are they also leveraging synergies for maximum throughput there, Jezza, right? Consultancy, man, there it is. But the thing here is, this is not really meant to be discussing Brave itself. This is an update to Brave. So some months after we originally talked about it, they've now had a chance for this model to take off. And as far as I can tell, it hasn't. No. I'm sure if you went and talked to the Brave marketing team...
And there's still not a 1.0 release even, correct? They originally said they said September, and now it's October and still no.
Yeah, and when they originally built the Brave browser for Android, it was tied up with this thing called Link Bubble, where you know the Facebook chat heads, where they appear on top of all your other apps, and some people think it's the best thing in the world, and some people think it comes directly from Beelzebub, like AG me. Well,
I'm in that camp.
Yeah, me too, exactly. The concept of this Link Bubble thing was also done by Brave. So all your tabs are actually little bubbles that appear at the top of the screen. Sort of cool, but also immensely annoying. And that's apparently supposed to be going away, and it hasn't yet. Now, that's not necessarily a problem. They've said it's going to go away. They're innovating, whatever. But it does suggest that they're under-resourced on the Android side, because this is a thing they want to go away, and it hasn't gone away at this point. Now, this is all chicken and egg stuff, right? They're under-resourced because it hasn't taken off like they hoped. It hasn't taken off like they hoped, possibly because they're under-resourced. But they've now had... We've now gone past the initial honeymoon splash of, wow, here's this new thing, Brave, and it gets loads of press. And here's this thing that Brendan Eich's doing, and it gets loads of press. And into, is it actually working? Are they significantly growing their user base? Are they signing up new sites to be on board? And as far as I can tell, the answer is no. It certainly hasn't hockey sticked like they wanted it to. No.
And I mean, Google's trying a similar thing, although they didn't build it into Chrome. They built it into their ad network, which is Google Contributor, which is trying a different thing from a slightly different perspective. And as far as I can tell, that's not taking off either. I actually, a week after they announced that, applied to the beta, and still I'm not in.
Yeah, still not in, exactly. Plus, channeling your friend of mine, Captain Lunduke, for a moment, I'm utterly convinced that Brian would point out at this point the contributor stopped showing the ads, but he certainly doesn't stop tracking you around all the sites that would have shown you the ads.
Correct. That does not address the privacy aspect. I would agree with that. So there's your update on Brave. What I'm curious from the Bad Voltage community is how many of you are actually using Brave, A, at all, or B, as your main browser? Are any of you using Brave as your day-to-day main browser? I'd be curious
Yes, I think. I mean, we talked about it some time ago. So you got the primer on it. Those of you who were listening back then, and that would have given you the prompt, the impetus to go out, look at it, give it a shot. Did you give it a shot? Did you hate it? Have you stuck with it? My policy, pretty much on mobile, on my Android phone, used to be generally open stuff in Chrome. If it's going to be something like a newspaper site or something like that, quite often I'd open it in Brave.
Interesting.
Not because I want to deprive them of revenue, but because I want to be able to read the article without 50 pop-ups telling me about their mobile app.
Right.
However, since then, I've basically switched over to using Opera instead, which does the same kind of blocking stuff, but doesn't have the stupid link bubbles. But I'd be very interested to hear who's doing it.
Yes.
You know, who's actually going to be able to look at it. But on other update things, after the saga of your Moto 360,
yes,
what's happened since?
So they did end up sending me, as I mentioned, a new device. The device is currently still working. And what's interesting here, I think, is it's still probably the best GPS-enabled Android Wear watch in existence, which I think probably says more about the current Android running watch market than anything else. I still run with it every time I run, and I run quite a bit, you know, 4 or 5 times a week in the summer. And what it does, it works really well. The interesting thing, I think, here is maybe two things. It seems like Lenovo has just completely burned the Motorola name and are just going to stop using it point blank, which I think is sad. I mean, you know, when I think Motorola in the mobile space, I really do think innovation, and they're one of the original companies doing this, and they made such high quality products for so long that I am a little bit sad to see the market go away. That makes me think they don't care about customer support at all, because if the name's going away, if people think the brand is terrible now, why, they don't really care. I think they think people are going to associate it with Motorola, which is gone, not with Lenovo, which is interesting.
Oh, so your idea here is that if you're going to kill the name anyway, then why the hell would you bother being nice to people?
Right. Because then it's just a cost center with no long-term implications, really. I don't think people will tie this back to a Lenovo name, personally.
Oh, man.
Which is sad.
I concede that that's probably, from a rather chilly business perspective, the right thing to do. But that's callous, man.
But
really?
Looking online, so many people have had such absurd interactions with Motorola support. Not just with the sport, but with just in general with their Android Wear stuff, that I don't know what else it could be, because their support didn't used to be that bad.
And you can imagine, this may not even be some kind of, you know, it's not like the head of Lenovo is going to ring up all the Motorola support people and say, just be crap to all our customers now.
No, it's
just
more of a resource thing.
We need to fix the internal system because it doesn't track packages around properly, and sometimes we end up sending someone a phone when they didn't want it, etc.
<Yes.
laughs> Mr. Garcia. And then the Lenovo people go, yeah, well, we're not going to fix that. You just have to live with it.
Right.
And they're like, we know there are all these problems. We're not allowed to fix them. That's not fair.
Yes, I would say
that kind of thing.
But with Google also now delaying Android Wear 2, every major manufacturer has said we're not releasing any new watches at all. I think Asus said they did decide to release one, but they're, as far as watches go, probably not a top tier manufacturer. Their stuff is generally quality stuff. It's just they're not known for their Android Wear watches. But everyone else has basically pulled any watches for the entire holiday season, which I'm curious to see where that leaves Android Wear. Missing a full holiday season with nothing new is, I would think, going to have a long-term impact.
At that point, it fades away.
Right.
And to be honest with you, if smartwatches were selling like hotcakes to people who actually wanted them because they were a good product, then you think they'd go, okay, fine, if we release this thing now and then Google pop out Android Wear 2, it's going to kill our sales. But we'd make a bunch of sales anyway. So this suggests that smartwatches are only being bought by morons who think this kind of thing is cool.
I will say I have a sport Android Wear watch for running and a regular Android Wear watch for everything else, and I really like them both.
I really think they're useful.
I think long-term, it's a technology that makes sense. Why even Apple's not able to currently figure out a way to sell them is mildly quizzical to me, I guess. Once again, I might be just a little bit too far outside of the mainstream, but because that was the only Android Wear running device that I think was good, and because of what Google's doing with Android Wear as far as it too is delayed and who knows the future, I recently bought a gift for someone, and I bought a Garmin because I just didn't trust the ecosystem, which says something.
Yeah, no, totally. And the impression I'm getting is the idea of having a computer on your wrist that monitors things you do sportsily is a good one, I think, but Garmin are the leaders in that. They're a trusted brand.
Yes.
And everybody likes them. Whereas the Android thing's all over the place, and Apple is the same. I'm just not convinced that there's actually a viable, sustainable market for smartwatches. I think consumer electronics people have fallen in love with the idea that people will happily go out and spend a monkey every 2 years on an incredibly expensive device, that they've gone, let's invent another market like that, and they can't.
I think the usefulness is there, and I think because watches are already such a big market that people spend so much money on, I think someone will get it. I don't know who it's going to be. I don't know if it's going to be Android. I don't know if it's going to be Apple. It might very well be a traditional watch manufacturer comes in with a smart-ish watch that is also a traditional-ish watch, and that's what takes off. But I think there is some nexus of the two that long-term finds a mass adoption commercial success. It seems inevitable.
There are a few traditional watch manufacturers who've tried that already. One of the smartwatches I looked at before I bought my non-smart beautiful watch was Withings, who do the Withings Aura, the scale thing that you've got.
That watch looked really nice. What is it, the Active?
Yeah.
Looked really, really
nice.
Yeah,
I forget the name of it. Jan Wildeberg's got one. We did have one, and he showed me. I was terribly impressed with it.
Yeah.
Because it's just an ordinary watch, but it also does the heart rate monitoring, and it automatically resets itself to different times and so on, and it can vibrate and that. But it's basically a watch with smart elements. It's not essentially a mobile phone strapped to your wrist.
Right.
So, and I completely agree with you that there are that people spend a lot of money on watches, and it's quite reasonable to go out and spend £200, £300, £400, £500 on a watch, no problem at all. But the idea then is that you wear it for a decade.
Right, and I think that's where the current smartwatch manufacturers maybe are kind of missing out, that people are not going to lay down $300 every 18 months on a smartwatch. That's useless. That's not a thing.
But equally, they're not going to lay down $600 on a watch which lasts 10 years and is a smartwatch, because that's going to be like running Windows 95 on your watch, right? Imagine using a piece of technology from 10 years ago today. There's going to be a whole bunch of people listening to this going, I don't know what you're talking about, man. I'm still running like Debian Sarge on all of my machines. But
I think on the desktop and mobile side, that's a little bit different because of how technology advances. On the watch side, I think they could figure out a way that, given a certain set of parameters, the watch functionality hasn't changed in 100 years. So getting a decade out of technology seems a little more reasonable on the watch side. Not completely more reasonable, but a little more reasonable.
The stuff about a watch that hasn't changed for 100 years, you don't need a smartwatch for. Look, check it out. My unsmart watch does all that.
Fair.
Admittedly, I can't change the face without either some really good art skills or a very, very tiny set of spanners. But nonetheless, so, you know, revisiting that, you're still happy with the 360?
As long as it never breaks, I will wear it all the time until the day that it breaks, yes.
Well, that's encouraging, at least. And it shows that Motorola, brackets, Lenovo, close brackets, are still capable of making a good product.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah, you know. Have they been told by Microsoft not to make it run Linux?
Oh, boy.
Not getting into that one.
Yeah.
Yes, in slightly less pleasing updates on consumer electronics we've bought news.
Smooth segue.
I still don't have a Mycroft. I'm starting to feel like, I mean, the project is turning out to having been quite perspicacious in its creation, because more and more people are getting involved with things like the Amazon Echo, and the Echo Dot is now out, and Alexa is a bigger thing, and Google have doubled down on the voice assistant thing, and they're joining up with now on Tap and all this sort of thing. So voice control stuff sitting in your house is becoming increasingly a big market segment, and Mycroft are in there right at the beginning, but
yeah.
I still don't have one. Where's my Mycroft?
I think this comes back to something I said during that show, and is hardware is more difficult than I think, especially software people, realize is to ship.
Yeah. And worse than that, I mean, it's not as if they were designing custom hardware. I'm sure they would say, yes, we were doing loads. But it's basically a Raspberry Pi in a plastic box. Okay. The difference between basically and what a Mycroft actually is why it's taken this long, don't get me wrong. But I think they're fighting an uphill battle. And the fact that once a month I get an email which says, not coming out for another month, and there's a picture of some jam and the word tomorrow, is kind of an indicator that a relatively small player, even given the fact they're basing it all on open source, they're using a bunch of pre-existing technology, both hardware and software, and we still don't have it. I'm petrified when I get this thing, the speech recognition's going to be bobbins.
I would be a little bit... I still am interested in getting one, because I like what they're doing with the technology. I like that it's all open source. I like the team involved. So I do... if it does ship, ever plan to get one. I think they really hurt themselves by letting Google Home beat them to market. When it was just the Echo that was the big one, people, I think, would hold out, especially if they wanted open source. Now that there's another giant entry into the market, and one that's proved that they're really good at machine learning and really good at the kind of things that this product needs to be good at, I think that really hurts them long term.
Yeah, and it's interesting because... a friend of mine has been playing with Amazon, the Alexa stuff, and writing skills for that is harder and more annoying than you'd think it is. Like, you have to give it a list of words it's allowed to recognize. If you want to say, okay, Alexa, play Top Gear on television, right? And what are you, so this is for writing a custom skill. Yeah.
Okay.
And you want it to go through your Myth TV library or something. You can't have it just do recognition and tell you what it recognized. You have to say, here are a list of TV programs, right?
Really?
So you've got to construct. Yeah, they used to have a thing called the literal, where you just said, in here goes a literal token. You just recognize whatever the hell they said and tell me what it was. And I'll do the recognition of what that means from the text, because that's easy.
Yes.
Now you've got to upload the text and then it returns you a thing from your list. Now, conceptually, that's not a bad idea. But
with things that are open-ended as music or movies, it seems...
Well, exactly. Secondly, you only allow 50,000 items in the list, which means that you couldn't use it to control, say, Spotify.
No.
You could use it to control your personal music collection, probably.
I guess.
You can't have more than 50,000 artists.
Right, but it's...
surely.
Right.
I know there are people out there who have, but I certainly have, and I've only got 50,000 tracks, let alone 50,000 artists, and half of them by AC/DC. But worse, even after, in order to upload those 50,000 things, you have to paste them into a web form. No programmatic API access to that at all.
Surely, like, that's got to be a product of how new the device is.
I don't think so, because they used to have this literal thing and they have taken it away.
That's interesting.
Right, so it was there before. I mean, some of it is going to be how new the device is, but you'd think if this is going to be the next big segment. And they were the first big player in it.
Yes.
And they're doubling down pretty hard on this. You go to Amazon.co.uk and the whole top half of the page is a massive banner ad trying to flog you an Echo Dot, right?
Yep.
So this is not Apple TV where they've done it and then are kind of quietly embarrassed about it and kick it under the sofa when nobody's looking.
Right.
This is a big play for them.
I think it's one of the bigger plays they have, especially on the consumer side.
Yeah, exactly. So that looks like it's going to be really annoying. Now, Microsoft have a chance to steal here, but what's worrying is that Google are also in the game, and Apple are with HomeKit to some extent.
Right.
And Google, at least, are likely to be more comprehensive at APIs. Google's APIs tend to be a bit Byzantine at times and
yes.
have way too much security rubbish in there. But they Microsoft had the chance to show up and go, look, we're not only open source, but you can actually use us in a bunch of ways that Amazon just don't let you do.
Right.
How annoying is that? And if they can pull off good enough speech recognition, accompanied by you can actually use this without arbitrary limitations, they could have done really well. But now Google might steal that spot, at which point the only people in the market for Microsoft are people like, you know, me and Brian and you,
right.
who are kind of hurt.
But that's
a
difficult market to sustain
stuff.
any kind of decent sized
yeah.
company, I think. I'm curious what the home product is going to look like, because I think obviously Google has, as Brian would point out readily, a ton of data to go off of, right? And
yes.
I would imagine that the quality of the device is going to be pretty high, and the speech recognition is probably going to be best in class. I am curious to see how that product, if it doesn't sell a billion in the first year, are they going to completely abandon it as they are wont to do recently? Is that going to hurt the sales of it? Because a lot of people, I think, are at that point with Google where they don't want another Google product unless it's basically Gmail or Android, because they don't trust anything to be around. I'm curious to see how it does, and if it does well, what they do with it.
Ooh, we think they may have tipped over the edge into people who now can't be trusted because they kill stuff. So people will preemptively not buy a thing in case it gets killed, therefore ensuring it does get killed. It becomes
yes.
a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I think Google is precariously close to that. I've had non-technical people say things about Google killing products, which makes me think that now it's a mainstream thing.
Oh, that's really concerning, because that's a chasm it'll take about a hell of a long time to climb out of.
It will. And now, I mean, they're killing, it sounds like they're killing fiber, and I could see them killing a couple kind of big things in the next year, which I think they're, as a company, at an interesting inflection point. This is probably a whole segment, I would guess. But I think they're at an interesting inflection point as a company, because I think it's clear that they're not going to make as much money on ads in perpetuity that they are now, right? Just this is where the ad market's
yes.
going. They need another home run, and how they get there, it's, I think, going to be interesting to watch.
I agree with that completely. So, yes, I still don't have a Microsoft. I'm hoping it pulls off a David and Goliath thing on the big players, but the fact that I don't have it yet is kind of worrying. Combined with the fact that Ryan Sipes, a guy who I'd met and seemed like a good guy, is no longer there. And
right,
I don't
he moved
really
to
understand.
System 76, right?
He's now community manager for System 76, yeah, but I don't really understand why he isn't there. I haven't asked him about it because it's none of my business.
Right.
But the impression I have is it's not like he went, well, you know, I don't think this is going to work or anything. So that he was the chap I knew there, and since then I've seen much less out of the Microsoft team than I did before. I don't know whether that's just because you might find I was seeing a lot more about Microsoft than normal people were, because I used to follow Ryan Sipes places, you know,
right.
Twitter and Google Plus and whatever. So now I'm just back to everyone else's level. But, you know, we shall see. It's now due in November at some point, so when it arrives there will be a Bad Voltage review. But that assumes it arrives at all. So that was our slightly bitty Bad Voltage. We apologise for that. But what you've got here is the better half of Bad Voltage anyway.
Yes.
So, you know, enjoy. Yeah, you get, you know, a reasoned discussion and no one shouts at anybody else, which is what we're looking for.
This was a very non... Well, this was half a non-shouty show because we don't know what if or what the other segments entailed. It might have got very shouty in the middle there. We just have no idea, actually.
We get to find out at the same time that you do, gentle listener, and... we're just as filled with fear and trepidation as I'm sure you are about it, but I'm sure it'll be fine, no problem at all.
I'm sure.
So if you spent the last half an hour throwing things at your Bluetooth speakers in the shower or whatever out of complaint, then, you know, sorry about that.
Speaking of fear and trepidation, what do you think of the whole Samsung Note 7 thing? I know you were in the market for a new phone.
Epic fail.
That's, they still don't know what happened. They still don't know the reasons. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
It's... Honestly, I think it's one of those things where it's been massively blown out of proportion.
Oh, boy. Zing.
not deliberate, that one. I could just feel where the sentence was going. But I'm sure there have been a couple of problems with it. But I saw a YouTube video where some guy got a random mobile phone battery and stabbed it with a knife, and it burst, it exploded.
Well, right? Lithium ions will do that.
Yeah, but this is the point, right? It's not like the Note 7 contains some uniquely dangerous death battery and everything else is just powered by marshmallows. This is what batteries are like. So the problem is it became a self-fulfilling meme almost. The Note 7 blows up and people are saying you can't take them on aeroplanes and all this kind of thing. The thing I read today is that it's going to cost them $4 billion to do the recall.
Yeah, they said $2 and $3 billion was the low estimate.
So that's harsh,
I think,
man.
The thing that's tough for them is that was rated one of the best Android phones to ever come out. And then a couple of them explode and now they have to completely recall it. And I don't know, you don't want to be the brand associated with things blowing up.
You do not. I mean, that killed Lancia in the UK, for example.
People still talk about Ford Pintos in the US, and they haven't been made since before I was born.
Yeah. Lancia pulled out of the UK in the mid-80s, and they have still not come back. One car got them the reputation of a thing that falls apart, and then their whole sales went in the toilet. And you don't want that to happen to Samsung because they're the only people on the planet who can challenge the global hegemony of Apple, right?
Yep.
Much as I'm sure Jono is sitting around going, no, man, the Google Pixel is going to come and save us all, right? I did read a thing which said the Note 7, someone did basically how many watt hours per cubic mil of battery you get. So a kind of, you know, battery power to volume ratio.
Yeah.
And it's slowly trending up, which is what you'd hope for, right? You'd hope that a given size battery this year ought to hold more power than a given size battery last year and so on. Otherwise, we're making no progress at all.
Correct.
So the trend was up and the Note 7 was at the top of that trend. But I do wonder whether they kind of pushed it a little tiny bit too far, and that's... what caused the problem in the race to be ahead of everybody else. The biggest problem with the Note 7 is obviously that it's just too big, like I've been saying for years about every phone on the market.
Well, that's a little bit what I'm surprised about it being named one of the best Android phones ever is I have the Nexus 6P, and if it were smaller, it would be the best phone I ever owned. In the discussion of the best phones I ever owned, it is just too big. That's the one thing I do like about the Pixel, and I'm sure we'll talk... So for those of you who don't know, Jono pre-ordered the Pixel, and so I'm sure we'll have a review on it in which I would presume the three of us give him a pretty good bollocking for ordering that thing. But the one good thing about it is that they're going smaller. The Pixel itself is very small. I would almost say too small for me, and the Pixel XL is actually a reasonable size.
No. Nothing called XL. The iPhone 5 is a reasonable size. Everything else is too big. But yes, that's going to be interesting. When Jono gets the Pixel, I'm sure he will fawn over it outrageously. But we should see how that works out. You know, it's going to be interesting. But yeah, hopefully it doesn't blow up and destroy a bunch of planes and get recalled at a cost of $4 billion. I mean, even if you're Samsung, that's got to put a hole in this year's earnings.
I mean, they
are
a giant, massive global conglomerate, but $4 billion is still a whack you do not want to take. And aside from just the $4 billion, and did you see the recall box? It's like a box within a box within a fireproof box. It's crazy.
No.
Yeah. So aside from that, just as we you said with the Lancia and I said with the Pinto, the potential hit this has on sales of the S8 and other devices is just added on top of that recall money. So it's this is a pretty big knock even for a company the size. And like you said, which is really big shame here because they make really quality devices. Like people, especially people who like TouchWiz, really like Samsung devices. And hardware-wise, they're all really, really nice on the flagship side of things. So,
yeah. And seriously, they are, with the exception of Apple, the only people in the game who actually make money.
Right.
Everyone else making mobile phones, making phone handsets, loses money. HTC lose money the whole time. Yeah. Samsung make money.
And HTC and Apple make loses money on it. Really nice phones.
Yeah,
the high-end HTC phones are HTC really nice, but like they definitely lose money. Which
it is a shame. So, but yes, so we shall see how that all shakes out. I'd be interested to hear if any of you have bought Note 7 and can take a picture of. You know, the guys in the NBC suit who come out to collect it off you and then do a controlled destination or whatever happens with it.
And that brings up a good point. Interested to know how many of you bought a Note 7 or are using a Note 7, or there seems to be a fair amount of people here who are refusing to return their Note 7, even though they might explode. Curious to hear if we have any Bad Voltage listeners who are Note 7 owners who plan on not returning them but continuing to use them.
Yeah, and have any of you bought the Pixel? We'd like to hear. There will be an upcoming review of the Pixel. So if you've bought a Pixel, let us know at community.badvoltage.org. Meanwhile, we will hopefully be back next week with a normal show. Everything's kind of moving around at the moment, but we're doing what we can. So next week, keep your eye out for a normal Bad Voltage. Meanwhile, this is Jeremy and I signing off. Thank you very much. You've been great. We've been Bad Voltage. Good night.